Do you have anything else to add?
No. Do you?
I don't.
I'll end with maybe just, you know, look up one positive thing a day.
I love that, like, at the end of every episode, you have something so inspirational to say. Everyone's going to be looking forward to it, your, like, inspirational quotes now every episode.
It helps if you do look up something positive each day instead of the negative.
It's emotional.
Emotionals, peoples, and followers out there, we hope you're having a good conservation day. Thank you for diving into the fourth episode of the Sea Emotionals podcast, where we talk about all things environment, conservation, and animals.
Yay.
I'm here with my co-host. How are you doing?
Great.
Did you have a good day today?
It wasn't too bad. It was busy.
Okay. That's always
but
good,
I survived.
Right? Staying busy.
I survived, and I'm here.
No matter how busy it gets, you survive. So I want to add a new segment to this cast today, and it is going to be an animal joke every episode on the episode, and I'm so excited for this one.
I cannot wait to hear it.
I hope I get all of you, or at least a few of you. All right, so do you know what I did today?
What did you do? Nothing?
Oh, no, I returned my lizard to the pet store today.
Why?
I bought a lizard and I returned it.
Why would you do that?
Because it wouldn't stop telling jokes. And I told the store clerk, and you know what he said to me? He says, "That's not a lizard, it's a stand-up chameleon."
Oh.
It's a stand-up chameleon. It wasn't a lizard.
Ah.
Oh, I thought that was good.
I can't even pretend to laugh.
I hope I got some of the listeners, at least.
Oh, my. Okay.
All right. Well, today's topic is going to be good things that are happening in the world of conservation, right?
Yeah, it's good to celebrate the good things and not always look at the negative things. They're both going on, but a lot of good things happening, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of negatives today, and you know, we want to focus on the positives and what's happening in the world out there.
Yeah.
You might not know. No one really tells the positive. It's always the negative,
and people are like always worried and fearful and just anxious. But there's a lot of positive too. And if you look at that side, then you may not feel as worried.
So we're going to cheer everyone up today.
Hopefully.
All right. Well, you start cheering us up. Tell us something good in the world.
Well, one of the things that I had found is something really cool is the first carbon positive hotel has broken ground recently. So this is like a hotel that's completely carbon positive. So it's actually like helping the environment and not in any way harming the environment. So that's really cool. And it is located in Denver, Colorado. And it's developed by a company called Urban Villages. So this is the first one, apparently, and its name is called Populous. That's the name of the hotel. And it was inspired by aspen trees, which is Populus tremuloides, which is the name of the tree. So that's why they named it Populous. It just from the aspen trees. So that was their inspiration.
That is really cool. I did not know that.
Yeah. And so as the trees grow, the aspen trees, they shed their lower branches, leave behind dark eye-shaped marks on the bark of their trunks. So
that's how they got the building design.
Yeah, that's how they got the building design.
Sort of looks like something you would see in maybe the Jetsons or like Bespin from Star Wars, like Cloud City. It's got that vibe.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of windows and...
Yeah, and they have, like on the windows, there's like lids and they stretch outward according to the solar orientation. They shade the interior. They improve the building's energy performance. They also channel rainwater. And the whole building was like an eco-conscious design, basically from like all of the materials that are used. They use like low carbon concrete mixes, a lot of recycled materials. Even the transportation of materials was considered, like how the materials got to them. Mm. All the operations and the use of the hotel will all be carbon positive as much as possible. Of course, with the transportation, you know, there's some, but all the operations inside the hotel.
I would love to know how the food works, like what the restaurants do and the like cafes.
Yeah, I'm guessing a lot of it will be local, maybe. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot of transportation and.
And I'm like wondering about the gym because I saw the picture. They had a gym. Like, how do you get water into the gym, like for drinking fountains, unless they just don't have any? Like, does it collect the rainwater and filter it? Like, I don't know what happens.
I have no idea. But it is like located like right outside of the mountain. So it's like just a beautiful place to be in general with a lot of mountain views. They have a bike shop, a cafe, cycling club, bike lanes, car share. They have an incubator lab for culinary experimentation. So that's interesting. And they have a roof terrace and restaurant.
Is big on bikes, big on cycling.
Yeah.
That's where Pearl Izumi's headquarters is. They're like a huge bike company.
Uh-huh.
So it makes sense that they have that there.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really cool that like this whole, like not only design, but like everything that they're doing inside, like everything is carbon positive. So you can like, I don't know, feel good about going there. And it's also beautiful. I saw this photo and it was like a window. It was like a circular window. It was like large, but it was like a little nook, like you can lay in it in like the circle window, like looking out into the mountains.
That's sweet.
So it looked like really beautiful. So yeah, it looked really cool. It's supposed to open.
Love to read a book in there.
Yeah, I know. Like looking right outside the mountain sounds really nice. I know in Florida, we don't really have anything like that.
No.
But it's supposed to open late 2023, late next year.
We're gonna have to go.
I don't really know the pricing, like to stay there. I don't think it's like a giant hotel. I think there was like a little under 300 hotel rooms.
I would assume in today's hotel climate, probably around 300 to 400 a night.
It just depends. Some are cheaper, some are more. I didn't see any information on like the cost to stay there. Maybe you can just work in like their garden or something.
It's a co-op.
I don't think so, but yeah, that I thought that was really cool. So that they're actually working on these types of buildings. So I mean, this is the first one, but hopefully more to come that they start being mindful of the way they build things and the way they operate things, and hopefully that will just start like a
in today's trend. World it's how can we get it done faster with the cheapest way,
yeah,
with an overguard for safety or
the environment.
Yeah. That's really cool.
I think it's cool that it's like nice to go to, but it also is like helpful. So hopefully they make more. I'm sure it'll be a while till anything like that comes to Florida.
One in every state.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whoa.
Thank you, Urban Villages. You can follow them at urban.villages if you want to look them up or find more information on Populous, the Populous Hotel. You can look them up.
I feel like I saw something similar to that in Japan.
Maybe.
I'm not sure. All right.
That was the first one in the U.S., so.
Oh, all of the U.S., I'm surprised. No yeah. one's, like, built a carbon positive hotel yet.
No, it's probably a lot of work and money that goes into it. I'm sure it's not cheap to do it, so.
I wouldn't assume so, no.
Yeah, they really have to, like, think about it. Oh, also, they're going to be planting trees equivalent to over 5,000 acres of forest, offsetting a carbon footprint that equals nearly 500,000 gallons of gas. So that's something else they're doing.
That's big.
5,000 acre, yeah. I guess that's one of the ways that they're making it carbon positive. Like any.
Like my backyard was huge and that was 64 acres.
Yeah, so 5,000 acres of forest. They're planting trees.
Hoo-wee. Crazy.
So that's good. Yeah.
Well, that's a positive change in the architecture division of the world. Then, you know, we're making slow strides in architecture, and we're also making slow strides in robotics.
Yeah, I guess.
Yep. Do you know anything about robotics?
Like what?
Anything.
I've met robots.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, some like basic ones, like the ones that come pick up your dishes at the table.
Oh, okay.
And then I met a robot once at like a space museum. But that was a while back. So, all right. Yeah.
So in robotics, there's a type of robotics engineering called soft robotics, which is kind of like the name implies. It's the robot itself is made of compliant materials that bend to the will of movement. So it's not restricted to joints or hinges or really hard movements that most robots were constricted to before, especially animatronics. You know, they only move one certain way. So soft robotics is using basically a new way to move, more fluid, more animal-like, more human-like. And many zoos and aquariums have been, or just scientists in general, have been adopting robots in their research and their studies. And I thought that was super cool.
Well, that, I know that's something that you wanted to do.
I eventually would love to research and, you know, put forth a plan to develop some fish, some robots, something.
Well, it seems like it's already happening.
Very, very slowly. So I'll get I'll get into that. The first robot I wanted to talk about doesn't really do so much to stop. It's not really for zoos and aquariums, but it's called the Slothbot. It's a robotic sloth. It's a robust robot. It's very, very hardy. It does not look all too real.
No.
At all. It does mimic a sloth's slow movements. And it has a 3D printed shell. So it's really tough. And it's able to act and move in the trees. And it has a camera system that is integrated into the sloth. And it's they're able to put the sloth on like a tree branch or something in an area. And they just let it go. It just goes.
It
has a solar system of energy and a backup battery generator. So it pretty much can just be in the trees like.
That's really weird.
As long as you know, there's solar energy, and it's very conservative at that. The camera system does not take too much power. And what it's doing is it's monitoring the environment, animals in the wild that humans just can't see. Because, you know, a scientist would have to spend 3 months in the jungle to research what that sloth could do. Sometimes a year. Scientists spend like a year or two just researching in an area. The sloth can blend into the environment. Sloths don't really have that many natural predators in the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's able to just be there and monitor animals and see maybe things that we wouldn't be able to see. And what that's doing is helping scientists to come up with plans on ways that how the ecosystem works and how we can better help it.
Hmm. Interesting.
Slothbot.
Just out in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
With real sloth.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know how functional its movement is. Like, I don't think it can go from tree to tree, but it can move around a tree.
Hmm. I guess my question is, why can't they just use a camera then?
Yeah, but with a camera, an animal, a bird, a sloth, something might take the camera.
So they're trying to camouflage.
So they're camouflaging the camera as a real animal.
That might confuse the animal.
Yeah, but it's also in the tree, and I guess where they're putting it, there's not many predators in the tree. I thought it was cool. I'm like, so this is just a step in the right direction of like, they might do this. They might remove ourselves from nature so that we don't disturb it. And then we might put robots in nature to monitor the ecosystem versus us being there, either a danger for us or a danger for other animals, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
There's another one that does just that. And it is called Blue Swarm. You have any idea what Blue Swarm might be from the name?
Blue Swarm?
Mm-hmm.
Fly?
No. It's an intelligent AI school of fish. Robotic fish.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So they're robotic fish that have little blue signal lights on them. It's kind of got like a white plastoid body, like a stormtrooper costume. And they've built 50 to 100 of them, and they're waterproof, obviously. They're a self-organizing collective. So they have the AI programming itself to be self-organizing. And the collective mind of the hive mind, that they can do different things that might not be in their programming. So they can self-learn depending on where they are. And the way they work is they're programmed to be spatial. So like, they know where their next fish over is.
Yeah.
And so they subtract that space to where they should be going in front of them. And then if there's any objects there, they subtract that space. So then they move forward. Then they know where they just were, so they subtract that space, and they don't go to where they were just were. They go forward, and they also subtract the space of where the fish are next to them. So it sounds really complicated, but basically it's like a complex like subtraction algorithm so that they can swim in the ocean not bump into each other.
Uh-huh.
And their programming sets boundaries for them to do different things that a school of fish would do, like if there's another fish, they might swim away from it. And they're programmed to not bump into each other and actually fluidly.
And what is their purpose?
So their purpose is not only to... Well, okay, so the first purpose is to be like a camera system in the ocean.
Okay.
So schools of fish have less of a chance of being caught by predators versus...
A single
fish, yeah. So okay. A single fish, there's a numerous amount of predators that can target a single fish.
So the school of fish is like more threatening.
The school of fish.
There's a lot of you.
Yeah, the school of fish, really only sharks or bigger organisms like giant squids and whales mess with them, which would be a detriment. I don't know how much money they cost if a whale just swallowed all of them.
Yeah, that would not be good for the whale either.
No, not having robotics in your tummy.
No.
So they're trying to come up with... right now, it's strictly for research purposes. They haven't put them in the ocean yet. But what they're planning on doing is showcasing the different patterns that schools of fish can do for communication, because the reason they're in a school is for survivability and the way they communicate to survive from threats. And so they're able to show students or people, kids maybe, who are in an aquarium, what schools of fish do. And, like, they're able to show that fluidly, like a real fish would.
Hmm. That's pretty cool.
But eventually they want them to be camera systems in the ocean. And I'm like, I can see a benefit to that. And like you mentioned, it's also a negative.
Yeah. If something eats them and that could kill the animal.
Yeah. And then there's Dell. Dun, dun,
Dell?
Dun. Yeah.
Like the computer?
Yeah, like the computer. So Dell is a hyper-realistic 250-kilogram dolphin.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's an animatronic dolphin, though, so there is no AI programming involved.
Uh-huh.
It is remote-controlled by an operator.
Okay.
But the dolphin itself looks... And even I've seen accounts from people online who have met Dell, and they're like, I did not know the difference.
Really? Mm-hmm. That's weird.
It's very, like,
where's
I guess...
Where's Dell at?
I don't actually know where Dell is. It was made by one scientist, so he is the sole owner of Dell.
Mm-hmm.
He has an organization. There's a few other robotic dolphins that are around the world, but Dell itself is one of the, I think, more realistic-looking ones.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you can kind of guess what the goal of that is, right? I mean, we're trying to replace dolphins in captivity.
That would be cool.
So Dell, I from people's accounts, it's almost hard to tell the difference.
Oh, wow.
The way that her face moves, and unlike old animatronics where you could tell the like plastics moving looked really fake.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is down to a compliant soft robotic and a plastic. I think it was like silicone rubber feel. So it's just all, it moves like a realistic dolphin. They put a lot of work into it.
I wonder if there's any places that have robotic animals that we don't even know. Like, they're trying to trick us.
Well, there is. Wherever Dell is,
but
Dell does
not,
shows.
But yeah, but they're telling you it's a robot. I'm saying like if you go to SeaWorld, maybe one of the animals are.
SeaWorld doesn't have any robotic animals.
I was just thought of the first place. I'm just saying.
No, that would be, you wouldn't know, I guess.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it would be cool to have a fully AI capable dolphin with the emotional intelligence of a dolphin, like the learning capacity. But yeah, sadly, this one's just an animatronic.
Mm.
And
Dell the dolphin. All right, I have to look that up.
So the only drawback I can think of to replacing animals, like having Dell and other dolphins in zoos and aquariums, the only drawback I can see to that is they're in captivity and environmental safe zones. If there's no monitoring by us in captivity, you run the risk of extinction with outside influences such as hunters, deforestation, or oil spills, climate change, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're no longer being protected, but also they're no longer imprisoned in a zoo. So it's like a win-lose, win-win, lose-lose. It's a debate for topic.
Yeah.
But I got one more animal.
Okay.
This one's a weird one. You might want to look it up so you can get an idea of what it looks like.
Well,
after
I was
I'm
looking
done
up Dell.
Oh, you are?
I was watching Dell swimming in the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And it's freaky.
Yeah, it looks really real, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell.
Mm-hmm.
It looks just like a real dolphin swimming. Like, really weird, mm-hmm. actually.
They did a lot of good work on that one. I think it's the most realistic I've seen so far. All right, so the last one that I have is by a design studio called Minima Forms, and they wanted to solve the age-old petting zoo problem, because, you know, you have all these goats and animals in a petting zoo, and it's really uncleanly and not good for the animals or the people. So they've created a bizarre petting zoo where rabbits, ponies, and pigs have been replaced with robotic pets.
Uh-huh.
And... It's not what you think. So their base code has been written with each animal to react the way that the actual animal reacts.
Oh, God. They're going to eat your clothes and pee on you.
So these pets react to emotion. They can be happy to receive pets and show you that they're happy to receive pets. They can playfully run around and swing around. And if you ignore them, they might try to get your attention. And they're always learning. They're always the base code is written, so they're always rewriting their code to pile on of what they've already known. And so if there's a process that they're not sure of yet, they're going to try something and then write some code like, hey, I did this, and then save it in their database. So they're just going to keep growing and getting smarter. Now, each one of these pets has a Kinect camera to observe the people in front of them. And that's how they learn. So they see your gestures, they see your hand motions, and they have a blob detection mapping. So this blob detection mapping can mine information and basically keep that gesture and, like, you know, keep where your hands are and understand what certain gestures do. Mm-hmm. And then over time, that's going to save in their database, and then they're going to be able to understand more gestures, activities, and have a realer, faster time of processing and understanding.
Okay.
So they're just going to keep getting smarter.
Yeah, they're going to just seem like really real animals after a while.
And the longer the pet is alive, it keeps learning and it develops a series of behaviors to fit the context of each situation. Even if in a situation it does not know or is not aware of, it might know how to react based on previous situations. It's just really cool. Like, anyway, when I first started reading about this, I thought these animals actually looked like the animals that he wrote the code for. Like, if you wrote a goat code, it looks like a goat.
Yeah.
So that is not the case. These animals look like DNA spiral.
Why?
Spinal coils. Well, it's just the way that he designed them. He's in the testing phases right now. He's not fully. Yeah, he doesn't have, maybe the money or the know-how to make a fully robotic, soft robotic organism. So he's made these, like, spiral worm coils sticking out of the ceiling that looks like DNA with a camera at the tip. It's called spiral. Well, the creator, his name is Spyro Poilos, but it's Minimaforms. So I want you to look that up just so you can get an idea. And those at home, if you're listening, you can definitely look this up too. They
Should
look
I be scared?
Really sci-fi. It's not scary. It's
How
just
do you say it again?
Minima, like minimal without the L, and then forms.
This it?
Yeah, these.
This?
Those are the animals coming out of the ceiling. It's so sci-fi.
Yeah.
So each one of those things coming out of the ceiling is a different animal.
It
so
opened
like,
in China.
This one could be a rabbit. This one could be a goat. This one can be a dog. And yeah,
they react. That.
They react based on what animal they are.
I don't like that.
But he can take that data and apply it. You know, maybe a company will partner with a company that can make an organism, and then they can take that data.
Yeah, they need to get in touch with the guy who made Dell.
Yeah. Right. They should partner together.
Yeah.
So that's all the animals that I have, but I think the Spyro Poliolos guy, I think he's Greek. That sounds like a Greek name. His research could lead to breakthroughs in the zoos, because if he's able to have this foundation of programming for animals where they keep learning, we could potentially have zoos replacing animals and looking really realistic. And acting really realistic.
Yeah, I would actually go to a zoo then.
And, you know, they might not be as dangerous as real animals.
They're still going to be dangerous.
They could be, but maybe if they don't have that instinctual, like, the animals have built in, because there's no cells. Cells have a need to survive and eat and thrive. Robots don't. So they might not have that, like.
Well, I would hope not.
Yeah. So they'll be safer, I'm assuming, unless they have some AI takeover and it's like iRobot up in here.
You still have to be careful around them.
Yeah. So that's it for the thing. But
interesting.
Yeah. So apparently we're running close to a sixth mass extinction event if the way the Earth keeps going. So scientists are saying the integration of robots into conservation science and those practices can help turn the sixth mass extinction event away, because right now, if we keep going the way that we're going, there's an 85% chance it's going to happen. We're going to lose 10 to 20,000 different species.
Not good.
Nope. I don't know the time period. I think it's a few hundred years away. But in terms of the Earth, that's really close.
Yeah.
For us, it's not, but for the Earth, it's pretty close.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's not good. No. All right, well, that was it for the robots that I had.
All righty. Interesting.
I thought you would like the Slothbot.
I would like to see it.
I mean, you can look it up. He's cute. He's just not
realistic.
Yeah. Here, I'll show you.
What's his name?
Slothbot.
Oh, Slothbot.
His name is Slothbot.
Let me see. Oh, no. Slothbot. Oh, I see it. It looks hilarious, actually.
It's huge, too.
It's kind of creepy, but...
They really just, like, painted the face on, like, kind of half-hazardly. Slothbot.
Slothbot is cute.
Yeah, he is. Ah.
Alrighty, so I also found some other good news on tackling methane leaks, which I know doesn't sound super exciting, but actually
methane leaks.
This could be really big. And if you are unaware what methane is, it's primarily emitted from the oil and gas, waste and agriculture sectors.
Death.
And it's really harmful, a super pollutant that warms the planet more than 80% times more than carbon dioxide over its first 20 years in the atmosphere. And it's responsible for about half a degree Celsius of global warming to date, according to the IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change. So it's a big deal, like these methane emissions. So some recent news... that California recently announced they're pledging $300 million to tackle methane leaks. So this is from a much bigger pledge from last year's COP26 United Nations Climate Change Conference, where more than 100 nations have joined the pledge, including 15 of the world's top 30 methane emitters. So it seems like they're actually doing something about this.
Yeah, people are into this.
So this is actually really big. So this recently came out, like California pledged this. They're going to plug old oil wells and use satellite to track leaks. So right now, California emits about 1.5 million tons of methane per year. And these emissions cause billions of dollars of damage to society because methane rapidly heats up the climate and also degrades air quality.
I can see that.
Yeah, slowing the rate of like this warming can help avert, you know, the climate risk, including crop loss, wildfires, extreme weather, rising sea levels. It also can help protect like the air quality and like damaging health problems like asthma, cancer, nausea.
Now that you say that, I've had conversations with people before who seem to think that natural minerals aren't responsible for, well, natural minerals and gases are not responsible for, like, emission into the atmosphere. And they seem to think...
Like it doesn't go into the atmosphere?
Well,
or doesn't cause damage?
It doesn't cause damage because they're like, oh, well, it's natural. It's part of the Earth. The Earth can't hurt itself. And I'm like, it's not that it's going into the atmosphere. Methane's always been around. It's a natural gas. It's that we are speeding the process up by, like, 100 times.
Yeah, the body can repair itself just like our bodies can. Our bodies can only take so much and it repairs itself. But if you overdo it, that's when it causes harm. So I know it's like a controversial thing.
Controversial?
How do you say that
controversial
word? I know it's a controversial.
I always try to, if you can't pronounce a word, try to say it British and it works out.
I know it's a controversial thing.
Controversial.
But I guess how do we know for sure? I don't know, right? I don't know.
You can only do so much research, but also like common sense, I don't know. But it's nice that they're doing that. I think there needs to be more of that.
Yeah, they're looking for like a lot of it's coming from leaking oil wells. And then they have the satellites that are going to detect
like once
like,
we drilled, leaks. They just didn't. Like, do anything with the well?
I guess so.
How do you even plug a well? Like, what do you do to plug a well? Just throw rocks in it?
I don't know that information. I don't know. But they're aiming to cut emissions, like, 40% by 2030, which is, like, a huge deal. So if this is, you know, causing the Earth to warm up, like, this... is going to stop that or lower it like a lot, maybe to the point where like the Earth could repair itself with that amount. But yeah, I thought that was cool that like they're actually doing something about it. The U.S. is doing something about it, and they're actively putting in a lot of money to reduce these methane leaks. So
it's about time.
They actually do care maybe about the environment, like the government and... Well, they're putting billions and billions of dollars into it.
Is it just California, though?
No, it's... So this specific article was just on California, but the U.S. in general, I think it's like 25 different states.
Oh, okay.
Are going to be a part of it. I'm not sure why the other aren't. And then there were 15 of the world's top 30 methane emitters. So,
yeah, of course.
Or 100 other nations are also part of it. So the U.S. is a part of it, just not every state. I guess California has begun. So,
No, I'm good to hear that. What?
Nothing.
Oh, I wasn't sure if that was everything you had. Because we're pretty close on time.
That was pretty much it. It was kind of like straightforward about that.
Well, that means we just need to look for other ways to activate carbon and other ways to use energy.
Yeah, I mean, when I was looking up other like positive topics, there were other things going on, like different solar things. There was, I can't remember what country, a country where like now when they're building, like, I don't know if it was just commercial or residential, like buildings, like all the roofs are going to have solar, like that's just like a part of like their building now. So they're working on that.
I'm excited. By 2030, we should know if we've seen changes. Okay. Well, that will lead right into my last topic. It's quite a short one.
Okay.
You've heard of spirulina, right?
Spirulina? Yeah. Spirulina, I have it at home.
Yeah. So it's like a microalgae.
It's an algae. It's like a superfood, basically.
Mm-hmm. So there is a new microalgae superfood out.
What is it?
Well, I will let you know.
Fine. What is it?
So, okay, I had to find myself.
You'll find yourself.
I found myself in Israel. Israel. The team Breville has completed a seed funding round. You know what those are?
No.
Like raising money.
Seed funding?
Crowdfunding, seed funding. Okay. Yeah. So they're starting a business and they scooped up $8.4 million.
Okay.
In this. Now, I don't know what it takes to start a business in the microalgae industry, but I'd assume research costs probably make it around $1 million, but they got $8.4 million. They even have investors called Food Hack, Good Startup, VC, Tet Ventures, Neva Team Ventures, and a bunch more. And they've also been awarded grants by the EU, the European Union, for 2020 and Israel's Innovation Authority. So that $8.4 million, they've pretty much already finished research. They're already completed with research. They really are just going to make a production facility now. And it will be pretty much, what is the word? Carbon positive as well. The production facility.
Okay.
And they're centered around non-GMO microalgae varieties. And they've gotten to the point where their research has made it to the point where their production and the cost will be more cost effective versus other products that are already in the market. And they've also made it to the point where their protein is color and taste neutral. So a lot of spirulina and other types of microalgae out there on Amazon and other places. Apparently, I have not tried them yet, so I can't make a formal opinion, but apparently they taste like complete garbage.
Yeah, they kind of taste like seaweedy, I would say.
Okay. So this one is going to taste like nothing. And the reason for that is that means at the source of the protein, they can imbue other natural and other things in it to flavor it up. and make it better.
So it's just the protein in it?
Well, yeah, but that's what I guess gives it the taste. So what they've done is they've made it taste neutral, and the price is cheaper than soy and pea, and microalgae is completely sustainable. So there's high production costs, palatable tastes. There's really nothing wrong with this. They use proprietary technology, and they have sugar-based fermentation so that you get a teensy bit of flavor in it.
Is it just like a protein powder, or is it the whole spirulina, like, plant?
No. It's not the plant. It's the protein.
It's
produced into a powder.
So it's like a protein powder made from algae.
Yeah, and it's completely taste neutral and color neutral. So it's going to be bland white, bland flavor, and that gives you room to mix and experiment.
Well, I don't know. I feel indifferent because the spirulina is like extremely nutritious from all the vitamins.
Oh, this is the same thing as spirulina.
I thought it was just the protein. It's missing.
No. It is microalgae itself. I'm saying that the protein is what gives it the flavor, the protein building blocks in microalgae, and they've made it to the point where it's taste neutral. So unlike other microalgae that's going to taste like the ocean or swamps or lakes or wherever they get, or even maybe not even getting it from nature, but just building it, just producing it, it's not going to have that flavor.
That is really weird.
Mm. And it's going to be more cost effective because they've produced it in a way that they've found it's just cheaper than soy and pea. They're able to commercially get it out in the products. The problem that they're going to run into, which they're not sure of, is marketing a product that no one really knows yet. Like, I know you are into health and you're very conscious and you know a lot about different products that are out there, whereas the average person probably doesn't even know Ripple exists, which is pea protein. How are they going to know that LG protein exists? I mean, I barely knew that was in the market, and I'm fairly into the protein industry and the health industry. So that's the problem they're running into.
Well, if it's tasteless, I think that is the plus, because a lot of the protein powders taste like trash.
Yeah.
So that's a plus.
So the company Breville, like you said, they're running into a problem, but they have a positive. Their positive is that it's nutritionally as beneficial as other microalgae and neutral in flavor, making it an additive for any other food sources. Problem they're running into is trying to market it and overbeat the competition. Like, spirulina is pretty much there's others out there, but they're the only one that everyone really knows. I mean, I'm sure
other algaes, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's other ones.
But they're the biggest. So, like, Breville's just trying to come up with ways to basically get into the industry. But microalgae as a whole is rich in nutrients, and it gets all the amino acids and all the essential ones. The protein, like, amounts in it is...
It has, like, EPAs and omegas.
Yeah.
Like, the fatty acids, which, when you don't eat meat, you don't really get that. So it's actually a really good source of, like, those omegas.
Yeah, so when this Breville actually gets to market, I would love to buy some of those.
I have the spirulina at home, but it's in... That one's in a capsule form, so... You just take it like a pill, but...
And I'm sure that they probably only have like a few grams of protein.
Yeah.
Yeah, this one's, I guess...
Like a full protein-packed powder.
Yeah. They didn't say what products they're going to unleash yet, like if it's going to be bars or regular microalgae or capsules or powders. They're leaning to powders. Because it's the neutral taste, is they're thinking the powder is the best way to market it, but
yeah, I mean, sure if you mix it and it tastes like nothing, then it's easy to add in. Right now, if you add in a protein like powder, it alters the way it tastes a lot.
This is crazy. It's like when I was young, when I was like 10, if you would have told me that when I was like 30 years old, I was just gonna be eating LG, I would have laughed at you.
Really?
Yeah.
I've been eating algae for a while.
I thought it was beyond bizarro that I even ate seaweed or kelp.
Yeah, I don't think that's weird at
all. As a kid, like, at least where I'm from, I mean...
It's just sea plants. I mean,
yeah,
just like eating plants. here, but it's just from the sea.
But it's like where I'm from, and this most of the U.S. is like this.
Maybe
I'm sure.
That's why.
We were outside of society in a way. I mean, the closest Target was 20, 25 minutes from my house growing up. Mm-hmm. So we didn't really have exposure into the modern world, into culture.
Yeah.
We were a very small town. So it's just interesting that, like, you know, finding an alternative to those people and even people in the cities, LG, like, I don't know. It's just really strange. But I dig it.
I find it strange.
I dig it, though.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's cool that.
So that's all I had for this episode. We hope that you guys learned something. We hope that this made you happier, knowing that there's positive things happening in the world.
Yeah.
As opposed to all the negative. Maybe we can do an animal episode coming up soon and talk about good things happening with animals. Just cheer you guys up.
I know there are things, like good things happening. Like.
A new baby giraffe was born like a month ago. It's really exciting. So there's stuff like that. Maybe we'll have like an episode like that. Let us know, everyone. If you guys want us to talk or research about a topic, send us messages on socials. Let us know, email, Instagram. Don't be shy.
Let us know what you want to hear.
Yeah. And shape the way that we talk. So, with that being said, do you have anything else to add?
No. Do you?
I don't.
Why not?
I'm all waved out.
I took
the tide to the nap.
I guess I'll end with maybe just, you know, look up one positive thing a day.
I love that, like, at the end of every episode, you have something so inspirational to say. Everyone's going to be looking forward to
it
your, like,
help.
Inspirational quotes now every episode.
It helps if you do look up something positive each day instead of the negative.
I like
which,
that.
If you're on the news, it's just negative. So some of this information I got from, like, Live Kindly is the company. They share a lot of different things about the environment, but they have some, like, a lot of positive things that they post. So you can follow them on Instagram.
Live kindly, everyone.
Live kindly.
And as always, daily trash challenge. Make sure everyone's picking up one piece of trash a day. 1,000 people pick up one piece of trash. That's 1,000 pieces of trash that were picked up that day that weren't be picked up the day before. So, you know, every piece counts.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just think of 3,000 people that picked up one piece of trash a day. That's 3,000 pieces of trash that were there before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then you're a piece of trash. I'm just
kidding.
Oh,
wow. No one's a piece of trash. Well.
Maybe
if you kill a whale, you're a piece of trash or a dolphin.
I just saw something about them killing a whale. I don't know who I'm saying them. Then. Like
those guys. Get them out of here.
Don't kill the whales. You're trash.
Yeah. All right. So I think that's it.
Have a wonderful day, night, morning, evening, whatever time it is. Maybe you're in space. Maybe there's no time where you're at. If aliens are listening,
you're in a submarine.
Then have a great
hope you're having a great time. In the fishing.
Enjoy the nature.
Peace.